Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, we have finally concluded covering the Constitution, or literally going through the very beginning of the first preamble, through the second preamble, through the third preamble, and all of its amendments. So most people now kind of understand a preamble, understand the role it plays. And so we now can start moving forward. Actually, I still owe you, not that you have forgotten, but I still owe you a copy of the Constitution highlighted as to what parts of the Constitution are being violated and just how bad. So all this being said, what we want to do is give you a color-coded Constitution, because you can probably see how much of the Constitution is being violated. Just, and this kind of lends to the fact that that's how many protections and checks and balances were placed in the Constitution to keep government from doing all of the things that it couldn't do or shouldn't do. So anyway, so we want to get back into what we talked about last Friday. I kind of glossed over this a little bit Monday, Tuesday, and so forth. And we want to get back to this concept of an immune system, that this, the body, the government, the components of our self-government actually has an immune system if we apply or if we behave and or act the way we are supposed to act. So we will get into that. This show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org. And you're listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. And so we've got a couple of, I'll just say, groups, companies, organizations that we endorse, Timber Nation being one of them, and I'm hoping to hear back from them sometime soon so that we can get you back into the queue if you're interested in getting hardwood furnishings. Ad Local is another organization and entity. If you're looking for ISP type of support, advertising, or even getting a domain set up for your campaign, you cannot marginalize having presence on the internet. Do not think, and don't use Facebook, and don't use social media as the basis of your platform and the basis of your campaign. As a matter of fact, try to stay away from that stuff. Try to get people outside of social media and actually becoming active in the real social world instead of in the big tech world, because we already know what they're doing and how they're manipulating us. All right, so we also have another company called, RadioDustCovers.com? Yeah, it's been a while since I've gone through these, but Stan Kluwer at RadioDustCovers.com provides you with custom-made dust covers and so forth. If you've got somebody that has some expensive audio gear, if you have somebody that has some, you know, ham radio equipment or what have you, somebody that needs a nice cover for their equipment and or, you know, something, they need to get a good cover, and go look at RadioDustCovers.com and take a look at these. I mean, if this is applicable, give Stan a call. He will do a custom. He'll put whatever logo you want on there, and I'm absolutely knocked out by the quality of the logos that he put for our speaker logos on a couple of speakers that we have. Anyway, that being said, if you're looking for financial independence, and as a matter of fact, we're pushing forward to the end of the year to where we actually start talking about setting goals, those types of things. And there's no better goal than setting financial goals for yourself. So if you are looking for, you know, financial discipline and independence, then contact Gary Smith with Fortitude Financial Services, financial coaching. So he will help you in and getting to where you want or to where, let's just say, you need to be, right? So let me see. Am I missing somebody? I think I am. Oh, yes, constitutioneducation.us with Keith Broders. I mean, it's been a long time since I've gone through these. I mean, literally a long time. So for the most part, because we didn't cover these things through the ratification debates, we kind of, you know, glossed over a couple of these. If you need constitutional education, reach out to Keith Broders. I'm sure he would be happy to help try to develop something for you. Please, please help him out. He's on a very limited income, but he is doing everything he can to support the cause. So where we left off, because I want to dive right into this, where we left off with this concept of big government, little government, we kind of left off in the early 1900s. But what we kind of established was the migration of limited government. Let me back up. So starting off, everybody kind of understands the Federalists were the ones that were promoting this concept of the Constitution. Once the formal establishment of the federal government occurred, all the big government cabal players came into office. They ended up becoming Federalists. It seemed like everybody was a Federalist all of a sudden. And next thing you know, there was a drifting, a significant drifting of the paradigm of government towards big government. Hamilton was the principal leader, and believe it or not, this is how politics makes strange bedfellows. The people that hated Hamilton prior to the ratification, while they were ratifying and arguing the concept of the Constitution, they were, you know, calling him dirty names and so forth. And then once they all got on board, then next thing you know, oh, well, they're looking to him for guidance on how they can undermine the Constitution and create big government in behest of what they actually said they would do. So what we saw was this division once again actually foment, and we had Madison and Jefferson form the Republican Party, which was limited government. The interesting thing was the limited government folks were really the folks in the South and Central portions of America. The big government folks were up in the North. So don't be surprised that Massachusetts, supposedly the Sons of Liberty state, right? Massachusetts was so collectively oriented, so big government oriented. I mean, to be clear, they were the ones that were always leading the way in trying to create. I mean, shoot, they actually implemented socialism first. So you can't look at, you know, them changing their spots. Remember we talk about they all have spots, right? It's not like they changed their spots up in that area. Now, there are plenty of states that were around in the New England states, Connecticut being one, New Hampshire, Vermont, those types of states that were being created and or created because of the Puritans kicking them out, those were the folks that actually looked differently, and that's why Massachusetts really had, you know, it did some really good things. No doubt that at the time of the Constitution, folks, if you didn't know this, the standard expectancy of life in Massachusetts was probably two decades above the rest of the nation and more than that above the world. Their standard expectation of life for the average person was 70 years of age because they started practicing hygiene. They started educating everybody and started ensuring that everybody understood how to have a healthy life. And so for the standards of their time. And so they were actually, you know, I'll just say leaders in some respects, but they also led in the wrong direction because they led towards collectivism. They led towards statism. But I digress. I was just trying to really help you convey, trying to help convey this concept between the division between the North and the South, where the South was really limited government. And they didn't want government to get involved in their state affairs, their personal affairs, and so forth. Well, it didn't take too long as the Republican Party started moving forward that they could start going big government. Now, the Federalists were kind of waiting and not getting enough traction as big government, and there was really no opposition to the Republicans. They basically decimated the Federalist Party, so they had to come up with a new name, and that new name was the Democratic Party. And so, and I'm basically kind of reviewing some of the stuff we covered before, but I want to put it to you in a different way. So the big government Democrats came on board, you know, with, you know, both guns a-blazing, you know, trying to enlarge, and Jackson did exactly that. He enlarged government and used the spoils system, or used his ability to populate cabinets and so forth by going very robustly in doing so. So this is why he was considered the guy that put the spoil system on steroids. I mean, for his time, absolutely. And everybody looked at what he was doing and goes, are you kidding me? That's just wrong. Because what he was doing was he was rewarding those people who contributed to his campaign so that they would start getting federal dollars. Well, everybody started doing it after that. Now, anyway, when we come back, we'll kind of start moving forward to where we actually created these different parties. And actually, at this point in time, we kind of lend into these very little specific things they started doing. So we'll be right back after these two promos to tell you what and how they worked together to move big government forward. We'll be right back.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as they started working down this path of big government and competing for big government, they actually started working together. Now, in the very beginning, as I talked about the Assumption Acts, I did not get into this, but when I talked about the Assumption Acts and the Alien Sedition Acts, they were diametrically opposed, and the Republicans at that point in time, or the small government folks, were ardent in not supplying and not caving to that. The principled Republicans, the principled small government framers, were committed throughout their life. In other words, they were consistent. It wasn't until later on where those who were following in their footsteps kind of said, you know what, walking on both paths is kind of nice. And then eventually people started realizing, hey, you know, my life's a lot better when I'm walking on this big government path. I can put bigger wads of money in my pocket. I'm going to make more money at this. And so, and they had opportunities to do that. But there were some, I'll just say there are compromises when you do that. When you start creating a collusion, you have to go along with whoever's calling the shots. In other words, it is a form of subjugation. It's honor amongst thieves. It is that concept where, you know, whoever is at the top of the pile is calling all of the shots. And so you have to be okay with that, and you will succeed. But freedom, liberty, and individuality, or being able to do what's right, that goes by the wayside. So the Alien Sedition Acts, as well as the Assumption Act, none of those really were done by compromise, but they were done by big government parties. Now, the Missouri Compromise was done by the small government party, the Republicans. It happened underneath Monroe's watch. It happened while the Republicans controlled both sides of the House. So what had happened? This actually gave you the testament that those Federalists ended up incorporating or changing their names. You know, they were RINOs. This was the beginning of the RINO, because they were Republican in name only. And so as Monroe didn't see the disparity, I mean, everybody there were Republicans. It was great to see such a unifying body, but underneath the labels, there was a stark division. There was a stark difference between the few of the limited government Republicans and the big government Republicans that were becoming more and more predominant. You got to remember, into Madison's administration, they tried to create a Department of Transportation. Monroe, they did the same. And with Jackson, they did the same. And all three attempts failed, but nevertheless, they were pushing and pushing for big government programs and getting the federal government involved in things it had no constitutional authority and standing to get involved in. So that being said, moving past the Missouri Compromise and going into the federal assistance for the railroad and then federal assistance over state land, which is what we covered on Friday. And we kind of wrapped up with the federal assistance of the assumption of crime and criminal law enforcement and its prohibition in 1908. Now, the prohibition, as we started moving forward with the prohibition of alcohol, I mean, that's when it went on steroids. That's when the federal government really started getting involved. And as a matter of fact, if you really look at history, some of the history that they don't talk about is the violence that the labor unions were using. I want to be clear here, folks. Violence and the types of actions that were being done by the union was repugnant to the country and to the design. It's one thing to petition government, but it's another thing to get out there and use guns and so forth. And when we look at how by the turn of the 20th century, the closeout of the 19th and turn of the 20th century, both parties were completely steeped in big government. As a matter of fact, they were colluding and working together. There was obviously this level of competition, but there was an honor amongst thieves. If you can get your guy in, then we will, you know, make sure that we support that. We'll create a facade for all of our, you know, followers. Oh, we're going to do this. But never, very rarely, has something gotten out of their control to where they were able to, you know, do the damage control in keeping these people in power. Now, there are sometimes you need to actually, you know, take the old sacrificial lamb and, you know, kill it instead of letting it, you know, go back out into the field to produce more lambs or what have you. Sometimes you actually have to kill that sacrificial lamb. And so that is what started happening as they move forward with the federal assumption of the unlimited spending and the temporary federal income tax that Woodrow Wilson campaigned on. Now, see, in 1912, Woodrow Wilson was campaigning. As a matter of fact, the heart of his campaign was two things, that he wasn't going to get us into the war, and he was going to spend us into prosperity. He was going to basically use the federal government to bolster American businesses and American wealth, that everybody, and actually it didn't happen that way. Ah, but they injected income tax, and it actually hurt people. And so, but it didn't hurt them like it's hurting us today. But it still hurt. And those people who were hurt were those people who were more well-to-do, because they implemented a progressive tax. I believe the top tier of their taxation was like 70%. 70%. And so the only people that were spared from actually having to pay those taxes were those who were the good guys. You know, I've used this term before. It pops up all the time. IFF, identify friend or foe. It's the initial in the development of radar. It was the first phase of radar imaging and the use of radar. And so it actually wasn't imaging, but it was just basically sending out a signal and that signal bouncing back. And that's how we were able to identify that being a friendly aircraft or a foe. And so as Wilson made this huge campaign in saying, give me the ability to tax income and we will be, I mean, it was the epitome of communism and socialism. And so supposedly America bought off on this. The real problem was that he was asking for something, and he was basically saying that this amendment would allow me to spend money on everything. The problem was the Constitution didn't allow him to spend money on anything that wasn't constitutional. But he wanted an amendment to be able to go and get the money. So this is why I tell you that the 16th Amendment didn't grant him power to spend money on anything he wanted. It granted him the ability to tax on what they needed. And based on what he was saying and based on the progressive side of this, even to this day, we need what we need to spend on. Well, no, you need what you have to spend on. What the federal government has been granted or delegated those things to spend money on. Which means that the taxation never had to get the way it was. The whole paradigm was already crooked and corrupt. It was already violating this concept of being able to spend money and do things that weren't within the enumerated powers, roles, responsibilities, properties, and so forth. So anyway, as he actually started developing this awesome, you know, income, this great way of bringing money in now, and he told everybody this was going to be temporary, that they would get rid of it. You know what? You don't put something into the Constitution that's temporary. I'm sorry, you just don't do that. And Madison even had a problem with that in 1808, of having that little temporary clause that, oh, for 20 years you can do this. You know, there was no sunset in this particular 16th Amendment either. It's good for 20 years. It is no longer a force after 20, something like that. That didn't happen. I mean, this shows you how much the lies and deceit the progressives used to get us into this position. And so as we look at the next step that they had to do, the progressives, now just keep in mind, when we're talking about the communists and the socialists in America, it wasn't exclusive to the Democrats. It was also including Taft. It was also including Teddy Roosevelt and so forth and so on. Even Harding wasn't necessarily a constitutional president, and even Coolidge wasn't. Coolidge embraced progressive ideas, but at least he adhered to the Constitution, which is why he gave us that amendment in 1926. But back to this banking and the federal bank in 1914 and creating the Fed. This right here, because all of a sudden all this money started coming in, now they had the ability to actually start basically transferring America's wealth abroad into very specific institutions, which was being controlled by the Rothschilds. The Federal Reserve was a bank that the Rothschilds set up and were going to be paid in doing this. Now, most people would talk about that actually feeding, you know, Britain or what have you. But I believe, you know, that you can do all the research you want and where that money goes. But I believe what matters is that it is unconstitutional to do that. It is unconstitutional to create a Federal Reserve and pay somebody else to do it when the Constitution never delegated that power. In other words, we don't need to audit the Fed. We need to get rid of the Fed because the federal government can't be involved in banking. That being said, we've got two promos, so we'll be right back after these two promos.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the Fed was created in 1914. Now, let me, as I clearly stated, the 1912 or the 16th Amendment was a part of the Progressive Era Amendment. The one that the companion amendment was the 17th Amendment. Now, you notice I didn't put it in here, but the 17th Amendment was an opening of our government for global corporations and global entities to eventually be able to buy that office or that vestige of our government, which is why our most expensive part of our government now is the Senate, where global corporations and so forth are buying these senators that are serving you, supposedly serving you, but excuse me, forgive me, they're not serving you. What they're doing is they are serving their he who pays the piper calls the tune. So they're serving their major contributors. They're not even serving the Constitution. But legally, they're all bound to supporting the Constitution. Legally, they're all required to support the Constitution. And so as we look at these, you know, these different progressive amendments, they did some damage. They created some twists, but they didn't do that much damage. Not like this unconstitutional Federal Reserve, not like the unconstitutional trust busting in 1904 or the federal assumption of crime and criminal law enforcement in 1908, and then later on in 1919 with Prohibition. They started moving down this path of growing and creating standing armies to inflict arbitrary laws and punish those of us who started violating these laws they had no authority to enforce, to create, and to basically punish. So the next step that was necessary was the federal control over corporate finance and the markets and exchanges. This happened in 1929. Now, 1929 was post the crash. In other words, after the stock market, after the New York Stock Exchange crashed, the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission was created to get in and start controlling these markets. Now, let me ask you a question. As you look at your 401ks, as you look at your investments, if you're a day trader, you have some stocks or what have you, you're playing in commodities. As you play in these markets, do you really feel like your money is safe? I will tell you that I believe the majority of America realizes that their money's not safe, but they don't have any ability to do anything other than that because the federal government has created all of these rules, fines, fees, taxes, and restrictions. You take your money out, they will take it from you. You have to play there. And here's the question, folks. Where in the Constitution did they have the authority delegated to them to manage these markets? More importantly, let me ask you this. If you don't live in New York and your primary investments are in that stock exchange, how much risk are you really throwing out there? Because you don't have the ability to go to your state legislature and say, hey, you know, this is bad news. Look at what they're doing. My point is this, that every state, if they really wanted to take care of their own people, they would have their own stock exchanges. And Ford would be, you know, if they had a Ford plant, Ford would come in and they would start selling their own shares there. If you really wanted to play the game and play the risk of being manipulated, because that's all they do with your money in these exchanges. They try to lie and deceive you to getting you to sell high and buy low, or actually buy high and sell low, actually is what they get you to do. My bad. Buying low and selling high is a good thing for you to do. But my point is that if you were actually able to invest in your own state's exchange, then you would be building businesses in your state. You'd be investing in the economy and the livelihoods of all those people in your state. So let's say you're Rhode Island that doesn't have a lot of manufacturing anymore because it's such a small area and it's pretty densely populated and it doesn't have any farming anymore. So it may have tech, it may have banking, it may have some different types of businesses, and that would be its market space. And it would be smart if you lived in Rhode Island to actually be investing in those stocks and those companies. Now, if you're trying to help support your state and your own economy. Now, I know that there's a big temptation, to go out and start playing in very specific exchanges and commodities. Oh, well, that's, you know, you can make some good money quickly. And I understand in some respects it's about making money. But when you have a great opportunity to make some good money, along with that opportunity comes some great risks. And I don't know very many people that have been that successful, because there are people that actually do trading and they get good at it and they do okay. And I could endorse some systems and programs and so forth out there, but I'm not going to. What I'd like to see done, and that's why I'm planting this seed, is that we actually need, instead of the Security Exchange Commission at the federal government, to allow for the centralizing and federal controls of your investments and the building up of your economy and industries and so forth, that needs to be turned back to the states. And if Ford wants to play in your state, they want to manufacture so forth, then they need to get into the exchanges of your state. This is how we basically decentralize everything, because if everything is in one pot, everything is being played on one field, then in one day on one field, they can take everything. They could do a lot more damage than they can in 50 different exchanges. And if you really think about it, even though one exchange may topple, that doesn't bring all the other exchanges down. There may be some interdependencies in the global exchange system, but it doesn't necessarily bring everybody else down. So why wouldn't we start looking at decentralizing? And actually, the fact that the federal government is so involved in New York State, and it's got this, I'll just say this dovetailing and symbiotic ties, all of these things are unconstitutional. Put it into this perspective. When they started bailing out companies with the TARP funds and so forth and putting trillions of dollars into the stock exchange, that gives New York a distinct financial advantage. The federal government can't do that, but they're getting away with doing that, and New York is getting the benefit of it, not your state. If you live in Missouri, you live in Tennessee, you live in these other states, you should be mad as heck, and you should be demanding everybody start looking at it in a Republican form idea. How is it that your financial needs are being represented in the state of New York? Your economy and what's going on in your state, how is that being represented in the New York Stock Exchange, where everybody's retirements, everybody's 401ks are being stuck into that? Are you kidding? This needs to all be deregulated, and this all needs to be moved back to where your state legislators have the power and authority to actually seize control of this. New York Stock Exchange may still be a big exchange, but it shouldn't be the size that it is. That's only because there's lots of people that figured out how to make money and how to position you into a disadvantage and giving them the best advantages they can. That's all that is. So back over to, you know, this whole thing that happened in 1929, one would see that that was a progressive, but that was actually Hoover that did that. I'm telling you, Hoover was, he may have had a Republican label, but he was a progressive. Sadly, even today, more and more people on the Democratic side and on the Republican side want more and more controls. And in other words, they want more government intervention when it needs to be deregulated at the federal level and moved down to the states. Yeah, more local government regulations. I'd like to see, and back in the old days, we used to have co-ops. We used to have, you know, county type of investments for farmers and so forth. Now, it may not have been a lot of money, but I'm telling you that we have the ability, and if we took our economy back, we would have the ability to be on top and leading the world in the economy. Period. It's not just in energy and all these other types of things. The problem is that the federal government is the one that's attacking us and subjugating us to the rest of the world. And the federal government has no constitutional authority to do that. What we have to do is we have to start demanding in full compliance to the Constitution. Are you getting tired of me saying this? Okay. So after 1929 and after the big overreach that both parties now, you know, they want to control it this way, they want to control it that way, and they're all throwing everything into these curves and into these, if you know, sliding sideways in a car, drifting, they're trying to drift into their own advantages so that they have their own controls. When we get back, we're going to talk about the FDR implementations or overreaches that are now being embraced by both parties as well. So we'll We'll get into this when we come back. And one of them is the third rail of government.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so for the doubters out there that think, that's a Democratic. If you don't believe that both parties are taking advantage of what the other party did for them, because they're doing this for themselves. They're not doing this for you. It's never been about you. It's always been about control and creating leverage to be able to get and move us in the direction the globalists wanted. Now, so the globalist, is there such a thing? Absolutely. But what we need to keep context on is when we look at how each of these parties have done this, show me, if you're a denier, if you deny that the Republican Party is, in favor of income tax, if the Republican Party is in favor of all this unconstitutional government, you show me the movement in the Republican Party platform that says get rid of the Department of Transportation, get rid of the Department of Education, Department of Energy, the Department of Housing and Human Services, get rid of all of these executive departments that are unconstitutional. They're not. And as a matter of fact, every time a Republican gets into office and every Republican body that goes into the swamp all enjoys ruling and controlling from that mantle of power to manage all the lives, all the laws, and all the things that they can inflict upon you. And you cannot tell me that that does not corrupt them. So, moving forward, the liberal side or the progressive or the communist side of the Democratic Party literally attacked labor. Now, we already know, I covered this in this episode of Calvin Coolidge's amendment attempt to actually give the federal government the ability to control labor in 1926. Well, it didn't take long for FDR, when he got in office, to actually seize full control of labor and started injecting and mandating unions and so forth. And the next thing we know, the federal government is in our knickers over all things. Everything he did, everything that man did, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was unconstitutional And it was maniacal, and the design was to set America up to be crushed, to be destroyed, so that we would be swallowed up into a global government that was better for all. Don't tell me otherwise, because even he had the dream, just like Woodrow Wilson, going, before we go too far from Woodrow Wilson also had the dream of the League of Nations and subjugating the United States to this higher, you know, this more noble entity that would be respecting of all people, well, except for blacks and except for minorities or what have you, as long if you weren't on their, you know, good guy list or in their color index, whatever you want to call it, then they were okay with eradicating you. Eugenics, Woodrow Wilson was a fan of eugenics and getting rid of very specific races. Wasn't much different than Hitler, other than the fact that he wasn't rounding people up and throwing them in ovens and so forth, but he was doing it with Planned Parenthood, with the Negro Project. The Negro Project actually was actualized by FDR. If you'd never heard of the Negro Project, look it up. It was something that was devised by Margaret Sanger, who developed Planned Parenthood and the concept of abortions and placing them close to black communities. The intent was to help eradicate blacks and or the growth of the black population in America. Folks, stop debasing yourself. Stop embracing these things that are destroying you. This just saddens me to see that all these different cultures and all these different races have embraced these plans of evil, these destructive plans. So, FDR created the control over labor. He actually stepped up and stepped in into labor, and now look today. What does the Labor Department not control as far as, you know, jobs, labor, and employment enforcement, so forth and so on? It's crazy. The federal control over retirement stepped in as well when he created the Social Security program. And it was ironic that he happened to name it after Otto von Bismarck, the socialist of Germany, that actually destroyed the German economy by creating Social Security and a lot of the benefits that he enabled. The only thing different was FDR didn't enable all those other benefits like early retirement and so forth. They had some reservations and some constrictions and so forth, but the intent was to get America to swallow socialism. If you have a grandparent or a parent that's still alive that claims that that their generation was the greatest generation, like my parents did, then the best wake-up you could say is, if you were the greatest generation, then why did you allow Social Security to be implemented? Because anybody can look at it today and go, wow, that is an albatross. That's an anchor around our necks that's going to drag us down to the bottom of the ocean if we don't address this. We don't have to hurt anybody by ending and eradicating Social Security, but we have to address it. We have to actualize it, and we have to move forward with whatever those commitments are, but in the commitments so that it doesn't hurt future generations, because Congress has been raiding the till for as long as I can remember. They've constantly gone, oh, we've got an excess, we got a surplus, we got to do this with it. Yeah, that's because they've been overtaxing us. So the next step, the next big program that the Democrats employed was the control over production. Once World War II kicked off, FDR demanded full control, and the government started dictating what colors of, you know, dyes, paints, and everything else you could use. They even dictated whether they could produce tires for you. Go look at the years, I forget what it is, I think it's 1943 and 44, where they didn't manufacture and sell a vehicle in the United States. It was all going for the quote-unquote war effort. Show me where the federal government had those types of powers. They didn't. show me what the heck they were doing in seizing all of these controls. Remember, the means of production and controlling them is the ultimate goal of communism. Just the same thing with the controlling the means of consumption. If you only control production, even though Marx really focused on production, that doesn't necessarily do, you know, the whole, that doesn't create the whole control picture of statism. They have to control the means of consumption. They have to control the distribution and your ability to get stuff, because if you can get stuff they don't want you to have, then you're undermining what they can do. So they have to have full control over the both sides of the market. Because if not, then you can create a black market and can start selling, and consuming things on a black market. If you're only controlling the means of production, you may be able to stifle some stuff, but there's other things that can actually go into both the market space being sold and so forth. And I'm here to tell you that communism, the full implementation of communism, is to seize both the control of production as well as the control of consumption. So now we see that the Democratic Party with FDR created, you know, the controls over labor. They stepped in and controlled the controls over retirement. Today, which party is saying this is an abhorrent abomination? This is terrible. We got to get rid of these things. As a matter of fact, nobody is going to stand up against Social Security because they don't know. They don't know what to say. You know, anybody that says we got to get rid of the Social Security system, apparently everybody puts, you know, these cross beams on you and says we're going to annihilate you because you can't do that. Absolutely, we have to, folks. But we don't have to do it so that people can't get what they've been promised to. In other words, you can't just close it out. This is why we have to have this conversation. Go read Free to Choose by Milton Friedman. He talks about how simple it would be to actually ending Social Security and what we need to do in moving that forward. The next step was a huge step. And guess who gave us the social programs of healthcare, education, and welfare in our government? Now, everybody's going to say, nah, that sounds like Democrats. Absolutely not. It was Eisenhower and the Republican administration that actually oversaw the implementation of healthcare, education, and welfare. Why? It's contradictory to, you know, the Democratic credentials of we're here for the people. Because they needed a Republican president to champion it, because the people were going to regret or actually reject it. It's the same thing when the Clintons were in office and they tried to get Hillary care. They couldn't get it instantly then and there. It took 10 plus years to get there with Obama. Why? Easy, folks. They need you to swallow the pill. They need you to actually be broken down, and they need to confuse you enough over the issues to where they make it muddy enough to where it is no longer black and white. And then they have you swimming in gray, and before you know it, in some middle of the night meeting, they actually implement something and boom, you're stuck with it. But you're not. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're proving that otherwise, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.